Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Skinny Pop Popcorn. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious. Oh, so light and crunchy. Skinny Pop Original Popcorn is the snack you've been searching for. Made with just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn kernels, sunflower oil, and salt. Snacking never felt or tasted so good. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious. Give yourself permission to snack and pick up Skinny Pop Original Popcorn today.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start the podcast, please, if you could review the podcast, if you are a constant listener of this and you haven't reviewed, please hit review and please make sure you hit subscribe. Just means the podcast grows and keeps going. I'd love that for you if you could do that, please. Just one little thing I ask. Anyway, this week on the podcast is a real treat for me. I have followed Little Texas for a number of years. He is in a scene that I am very far removed from. And I really enjoy kind of watching from afar of what he does as an artist and how he kind of moves around his industry and releases music, and everything he does about his brand and him as a human being just feels so on point. So I really wanted to get him online. He also cracks me up every time he posts on social media and is just a general funny guy. And I just love what he does. So I'm going to stop rambling and let this conversation go. It was a really good conversation. I really enjoyed it. So hold in and enjoy. Without further ado, Little Texas. Little Texas, what's going, my man?
Hey, what's up, brother? How are we?
Really good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm doing good, man. I'm just getting the day started, you know, just my normal run-of-the-mill Tuesday.
I feel you, man. I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Right. When we saw each other a couple of weeks ago, you introduced me to somebody as Will Sparks.
Yeah, I did. Well, the resemblance is uncanny, man.
Is he this good looking?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, not as good looking, you know. I was like,
pretty
wow.
Hard. It's pretty
Will
hard.
Sparks got really, really hot over the course of the past like year.
The thing is, I actually don't know who Will. I know the name Will Sparks, but I don't know his music at all. But people,
Big Room.
Is it like EDM Big Room stuff?
Yeah, it's like I would consider him in the same like realm as Jimmy Trumpet, sort of like kind of like mainstream Big Room, Hard Dance, Melbourne Bounce, like, you know, anything that's just got big ass kick, 128 up to 160.
Yeah. Wow. I'm not Will Sparks.
Nope. You're not. You're Will Clark.
Will Clark. How's life, man?
Oh, it's good. Just got back from some shows this weekend and just finished my album. And
sick.
Now I'm kind of deciding what's the next sort of project, you know, like where do I take the energy now? And it's either writing another techno record or starting another album.
Mm. What when's the album out?
I think we're going to push it. We had to like push it back. We just like went really deep with the art this time. And we wanted to give a little bit more lead time than we had last time. We're going to print vinyl and stuff. So sick. We've kind of got a lot of like back end stuff to do. So probably like early June, maybe late May, but most likely it's going to be early June. We're not really in a rut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good. It's kind of good to have that.
How was your process of writing the album?
You know, I wrote a lot of it last year, kind of before EDC. So it's kind of weird. Like, so every year I try to get really shredded for EDC, right? So I'm dieting, I'm working out really hard, and I'm not eating enough. And so like, in order to like get through that, I have to like work, like just constantly sit in front of my computer and work. So I'm not thinking about like eating cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately still thinking about eating cheeseburgers. So I get a lot of work done actually when I'm like really low on the calories and like kind of in like my body sort of like consuming itself in a sense. I actually get a lot of work done, man. So I wrote like probably half of it during that time. And basically I treat it the same way I treat my sets, like 160 to as high as I want to go, you know? And I just write a slew of music in between that sort of realm and those genres that, you know, are in that sort of vibe.
That's cool, man. It's a weird concept that you work harder when you're working out harder and you're in that like deficit mode of like, I need to concentrate. But there's something about that, right? When it's about, you have to work harder when you're uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's, you know, nothing like a little pressure to get the gears moving, man. You know, I don't know about you. Are you like that? Like when I have like deadlines where I have to like crush shit out, like it forces me into like the right mindset. It forces me into the like, I don't know if you're the same way.
I fucking love deadlines. I love somebody telling me I needed it. I need it in 2 hours. It's the best feeling. And I think there's also like a level of artistry for me that comes out where it's like, if I spent a month on this, it would never be as good. And I'd just like Miranda on and it would just wouldn't happen. Whereas like, even like I'm working on some projects at the moment and I allot time in my diary for it on my calendar. So it's like, I give it a week and I'm like, I have a week to do what I need to do and get it over and done with. Yep. And that really just helps me get to a nice finish time and something that's just like, I'm really proud of as well.
Yeah. I think that's, man, the longer I get into the game, the more, you know, I think like the deadlines and like this, like, I'm kind of against the like sort of whimsical, like true, like artist kind of like stereotype where it's like, oh, I just, you know, I just create, man. It's like, no, dude, I like have a schedule and I sit down and I'm very rigid. But what I think it is, man, what I really do think it is though, is it's a dichotomy of that notion, but the sheer essence of writing music though is that kind of whimsical artist thing that it's like you're imposing a schedule and imposing like a time frame and like a work process, but the actual work that we're doing is like extremely creative work.
Totally.
It is writing music and it's not like plugging numbers like an accountant or something like that.
Yeah.
The actual job is something that is very creative and sort of whimsical. So it's like that juxtaposition of doing something that's like, you are just like writing, you know, you're just making something from zero, but in a, like, I want to say like kind of a rigid way. And that dichotomy, I think actually is at least in my experience, many, many successful artists embrace that sort of opposing sort of concepts.
I agree. I think there's a level of certain artists and I'm not saying this is there's right or wrong ways. Whatever works for you, but I know I'm sure you know as well. I know so many artists that are way more talented than me at writing. They're way better writers than me. They're way more talented at making better songs and doing that, but they just don't do it, or they have this like level of perfectionism that they just won't release it. And it's like you're actually holding yourself back in your career, and you're stopping music to be listened to by millions of people that could enjoy your music. But because you're a perfectionism, or because you're always working on something better, it never gets the light of day.
Yep. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And that's the real, that's the sad part about the music industry, actually, you know, is that, and it's the people who are successful find that balance. Totally. You know, they really do find that balance. And yeah, I mean, we all know the guy who can make the best sounding music ever, but he has never played a show in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. I kind of want to cut back a little bit. When I first met you, it was at a wedding.
Oh yeah. That's right. Maddie's wedding.
Mad's wedding. And I'll be honest, like it was the first time I ever met you. It was the first time I ever heard of you. I didn't even know you were a DJ. Like when we got introduced to each other, we didn't know we were DJs. We were just like, oh, we're friends of Maddie.
I know who you were. I know who you were.
Did you? Nah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. You know, you got a good look.
But like,
you're pretty easy to spot.
True. But I was like, who the fuck is this? Like, it was a fancy dress wedding. So like a dress up wedding, everyone was dressed up, and you were dressed up as a cowboy. And I was like, sick, this is a sick outfit. And then I followed you on Instagram. I was like, wait, this is just what he wears on a daily basis. This is just like a normal day of Little Texas. And I was like, I followed you since then and been like really interested in your career, because you're doing something that in the world that I'm in is very different, very far away from the world that I'm in music. But I also don't see anyone else doing what you're doing, which is, I love. And
thank you.
There's also polarizing opinions on you as an artist, right? And I think with what you're doing, is it's that interesting that there's always going to be somebody that hates you and there's somebody that loves you. But I think when you're that polarizing, the love for you is so strong. There's people that just, they're diehard fans. And I've seen that grow over the years. I've seen it from when we first spoke to like you having a smaller social media and barely playing shows, to now headlining big shows, having a huge social media following, and really just like authentically just going in on your brand, which like I'll be honest, there's nobody, and I've said this so many times about you, like off camera and to friends, and it's like, you're truly the one person that I can be like, he's really doing it. Like even down to your email address. It's like you're just so on brand, and I kind of want to get into that. And it's like, how is that? How have you got to there?
Oh man, it's. I look back and I think about it a lot, because I've been Little Texas for a long time. You know, I was Little Texas in like 2012 and stuff. You know, and I was like kind of doing the trap thing back then, 2013. I like played some, I toured a little bit with Lostradamus and seemingly was going to have like potentially a career in the trap industry, but long story short, moved to LA, party too hard, and had to clean my act up. I don't know, you know, one time I just like was DJing and I put the cowboy hat on, you know, and I was like, wait a second, this like all makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, a lot of what branding is back to kind of, you know, actually what I was just kind of talking about is embracing these bizarre juxtapositions has been a huge thing for branding for me. And a guy that influenced me heavily actually is this guy Mono Neon, who's a bass player. And I'm, you know, people probably seen him. He like plays left-handed and he wears like super bright clothes. He was Prince's last bass player.
Okay.
And now he plays with like Erykah Badu and all these big people and he does funny videos. But he has this artist manifesto that was at the end of his videos on YouTube and I had never seen it. And I watched a YouTube video of his and at the very end, it was like Mono Neon artist manifesto. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And so I like screenshotted it. And he had these like very like strong tenets that resonated with me. And so much of it was embrace bizarre juxtapositions. He loves to wear bright colors, but I took that as like, we should have something that everybody knows fucking me when I walk in the room.
Yeah.
When I walk in the room, there is no question who I am.
Yeah.
And using my interests that are organic to me. So like anybody can be like, well, I'm going to be a, you know, I have this thing that I like and this thing that I like, or like, what about this and this together? Like, I'm going to mix, I don't know, like UKG and fucking techno or something. I don't know. You could just mash up anything you want. You know what I mean? Like anybody can come up with two opposing concepts and put them together. But the difference is that it's got to be organic. Mm. You know, the key with branding is that it's got to be true to you. And like all of the stuff that I do, I'm genuinely interested in and genuinely are a part of my makeup, you know? And so like my affinity for nu metal is because I was born in 1989 and I was inline rollerblading in 1998.
Yeah.
You know? And I was listening to Korn with a ball chain and JNCOs on, you know, and it's actually real.
Yeah.
And really what it is it's trying to deliver products in a very organized, quick fashion that cut through the saturation of the music industry, cuts through the saturation of social media content. Cause like right now there's probably just like a million posts on Instagram, mm-hmm. like in this instant, you know? And so how can I cut through those things? And it's always this sort of cut factor analysis of my project. And ultimately I just treat everything like I'm creating a product. That's really what it is, that I'm a product, the music is a product, these are packaged things, and how do we package these things in a way that's going to catch the eye, and how can I bring in my personal interests outside of EDM to make the product cut?
I love that. So what is that process? Let's say, for instance, I kind of want to dig deeper into that, and it's like, okay, the product is a new mixtape. I'm just using this for example. Yeah. All right, you drop a lot of these and I see your socials, you drop a lot of them. What is the, is there a bigger team apart from you? Is like, what is the team and what's the conversations behind, okay, we're going to be dropping a mixtape in a month. What are the creative decisions that you do around that? What are the creative?
Yeah.
Because it is very creative. Like what you do is very visual. It's very, very fucking visual. And yeah, I'll let you answer that.
Well, you know, listen, I'm not an introvert by any stretch of the imagination.
No shit. I am
always, I've always been that way. I've always been extroverted. I've always been a guy who's willing to express himself visually outside and let like my outward expression be a representation of my inner interests and my like inner stuff. And so a big thing for me is I pay attention to what people are doing in the industry, which is why I follow a ton of DJs who are not hardcore DJs, but I also follow all the hardcore DJs and all the hardstyle DJs. I want to know what's going on in the scene. And it's not to say that I want to like be like them or jump on trends. I just need to know the fabric of the music industry in the current moment.
Yeah.
What artists are doing, what successful people are doing, what up and coming people are doing. And ultimately I go, well, if everybody's doing this, I am not going to do that. And I try to find, as far as the art process is concerned, how we're going to visually brand something. If everybody is doing a certain style, if everybody is like doing something in this like edgy fashion or using like, there was that trend where everybody was doing like compact discs, you know, like their art looked like a CD with like a sort of like edgy layer on the top, you know?
I hate it.
And I was like, look, like it or love it, everybody's doing it. So I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to find an artist who is going to be able to pull something outside of the normal scope within hardcore and bring that in, you know? So it's like a kind of a balance. It's always a balancing act of like, what if we did a Pokemon card, right? Like, it's like, okay, like, let's just do a Pokemon card. Like, that'll be cool. It'll look cool. It'll be like really bright and vibrant, probably, you know? So people will like catch it. It's not like edgy and dark. So like social media wise, people will see it because it's vibrant. But how do we make it not, how do we still make that hardcore?
Yeah.
You know, how do we like edge that up enough to where it's not overly edgy, but it's not overly like soft? Because it would be kind of strange, given the music I make, to have it be like really like Jigglypuff or whatever, totally. You know, the Pokemon is.
Yeah.
You know, so how do we edge that up a little bit? And that's kind of the idea. It's like, well, let's throw some barbed wire in it. Let's make the Pokemon maybe like evil, you know? and that's kind of what we do. And we pull from like 90s rave culture. We pull from all of these interests that I have. And it's a lot of like, it's just pulling sources. Yeah. That's really what it is.
I think it's really interesting because it's also like coming from the scene that I'm in, everything has to be cool, quote unquote cool. Not everything has to be, but that's kind of the portrayal that a lot of artists try to kind of do. And this isn't me saying you're uncool, but it's the zero fucks given to what anyone else thinks apart from how you market the brand. And there's something that's really interesting that no one else has. I don't see anyone else doing it in this industry. Like, it's, we've all seen the shots behind the DJ booth. We've all seen everything. Everything just seems to be regurgitated content. And you're not. It's really, how big is your team behind you doing this?
Well, I got my two managers who were also into like the same stuff, you know. Like, one of them really like into, you know, comes from the punk rock sphere. And my other manager, we have similar interests in like our tattoo artists. We have similar interests in our, you know, artists, graphic artists that we like, fashion stuff. And my agent, he's more like into like, the agent is different. The agent is more of a function of like, you know, like business. I need a bulldog who's out there like getting my shit done for me. But as far as the management team, you know, we really have like similar interests, and they really do understand me.
Yeah.
And they understand my interests. And so it's never a question of things like things are cool or not. It's a question of, for me, like, is this the best and most unique thing that I can do in the moment? Because at the end of the day, not every piece of art I'm going to make is going to get, and not every song is going to be a banger and it's going to be a hit.
Yeah.
But as long as I can put my best foot forward in each individual thing, then that's the goal.
Yeah.
That if I can get it in the moment as best I can, then that's what's perfect at the moment. And that works for us, you know. And it's never been a question of, is this cool or not? Or it's more of a, I don't know how to explain it, man. I just do what I like.
Yeah, it makes so much sense to me. And it's just authentically you, which
yeah.
It's what I tell everybody when they ask for advice. It's like, just be you. Like, don't try and, it's not trying to fit in with anything. It's just be you and create the best possible art, whatever art you're making. If you're making art to listen to or art to put up on the wall or whatever you do, is like, just be you. And there will be a niche of people that will like you. It's just the process of the artist of seeing somebody successful and wanting that success, not necessarily wanting to be that artist, but wanting that success and then morphing their art to then sound or be like that successful artist, which then takes the authentication of that of that artist out, and then you've got another run of the mill artist that's just doing what everyone else is doing.
Exactly. And there's like a couple, I can maybe explain it through a little bit of anecdotes, you know, and cause you're right, dude, the classic trite saying, you just be yourself, man.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's real.
Yeah.
It, people say that it's trite. It has become a trite saying because it's so true.
Yeah.
That it really is boiled down to that. But I tell, you know, aspiring hardcore and hardstyle producers all the time this one anecdote. I go, listen, that kick that you think that you made that you think is too weird or is different or like you, it's not normal, that's the kick.
Yeah.
That's the one that you need to use. And if the kick is nice, use it twice. You know, like a key to branding and a key to developing a sound, and I'm sure you can attest to this,
yeah,
is using the same sounds over and over again.
Yeah.
And I realized the way I arrived at this was it was quite simple. I was like, well, you know, like the Beatles, I'm not a huge fan of the Beatles, but the Beatles got up on stage every night for years and years on years with the same guitar, the same amp, the same bass, the same drums, and the same mics. And they played 2 hours with the exact same instrument.
Yep.
And their voices. They only had a very finite amount of
variation,
tools to use. Yeah. And they made it work. They became the biggest band of like all time.
Yeah.
You know, in their era. And if that's anything, there's a really big lesson there. Is that, and I think this is the problem with EDM in general, and I think electronic music in general, that this plethora of information that we have, which is beautiful, like Splice and all these different things, amazing thing to have at our fingertips, unreal, can be a crux, or it can be a crutch, excuse me, it can be a crutch to an artist because too much information. And this notion that we need to invent the wheel and we need to make something completely unique every single time has somehow crept into the fold of the music industry, especially electronic music, and it's just so not true. It's so not true. And the guys who have sounds because you can tell that it's them. And why can you tell that it's them? Because of the sound.
Yeah. It's
you know,
it's part of the branding. And I think a lot of artists don't like talking about themselves as a brand. I actually like the word brand, and I like boxing everything into something so that you know what you're going to get. I think there's a level where as an artist, you're allowed to evolve in that brand and your sound can evolve and change. But I think that's also down to the artist telling the story the correct way to then evolve. But yeah, one of my closest mates, I'm not going to mention their name, but like is a classic example of when the sound starts to get big that they're making, they revert back to somewhere else and go make something new. And I'm like, you just have to wait here for 3 more years and you could be the biggest person in that scene. But you, exactly. Every time you decide, and then they complain, but they're like, why is this person doing that when I was doing this 3 years before them? I'm like, well, the fact is that person stuck to that and carried on going, exactly, and carried on pushing. And there's levels, right? It's like, there's levels to that where it's like, maybe we need the forerunners at the front pushing sounds. And sometimes those people aren't actually worried on a business side of things to go, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this until it is financially viable and the brand has turned into an actual brand and it's actually earning me a reasonable amount of money. And then there's some people where I guess for me is like, I'm a little bit more driven by finances and driven by success in finance, where it's like, okay, let's double down. And let's, and similar for you, from what it feels like from an outsider's point of view, it's like, this is me and this is what you're going to get from me for a long time. And you,
absolutely,
and you will like it. And if you don't like it today, you'll like it tomorrow.
Yeah, and you'll talk about it at the very least, you know. Yeah. And I'm with you 100%. I think of everything very analytically, very objectively, very, very business kind of oriented. And what's enticing to me, And I learned this through my failures in the music industry. I learned this through years and years of trying and trying and trying different things and ultimately not arriving anywhere. And what I realized over the past 4.5 years, completely sticking to hard dance, picking one thing, was that there's only the individual who attacks one thing and dedicates their whole essence to a genre or a like finite scope.
Yeah.
Can understand the intricacies, the nuances, the subtle nuances of music or a specific genre that other people will not be able to. The people that jump around and people that do a little bit of this and a little bit of that and whatever, and that's very enticing to me. I'm more interested in being a master of one thing.
Yeah.
And being that guy and knowing something so in and out that that's my experience, that only time and only dedicated effort in one area can truly lead the individual to a place of extreme depth. Yeah. And there's something very fulfilling about that. Mm. You know, there's something very, very, very fulfilling to me in that realm. And it's like, well, and I attribute it to the gym as well, that it's like, dude, you go in and you bench press, right? And I've been bench pressing for 3-4 years.
Yeah.
But it's different. It's different because I've done it for 3 and 4 years now. And the bench press has taken on a much different aspect, or at least my like chest days have taken a different aspect. And I found that same thing with creating music, you know? One other thing is another big pitfall I think a lot of artists make as they grow, like your friend, what you're saying about your friend, is that you grow and you get new fans. But what I think a lot of artists realize is that their new fans didn't see all the stuff the past 2 years.
Exactly.
So you don't need to like continually make brand new everything. Like you really don't.
Yeah.
Like those people haven't heard the cum jokes yet. You know what I mean? So make another fucking cum joke because it's funny, you know, or whatever the example is, you know.
No, it's also that thing with artists that have had hit records that then refuse to play the hit records. And don't get me wrong, I don't play some of my records from back in it. Like my career is very much like I have my Dirty Bird years of when I was signed to Dirty Bird, and then I have my current years of what I do now. And I don't play the Dirty Bird records. And that's not because I dislike Dirty Bird. I love them to bits. I respect what they've done. But that's just a different time for me as an artist. And I still get people come to my shows asking for those records. It's few and far between now. However, it still happens. But there's also for me is like, if I didn't play some of my biggest records of today in what I class as the current Will Clark vibe, I'm just fucking failing all of my fans. They pay good money to come and see me to play those records.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. And I love that you brought that up, man. I really, really do. Because I see too many artists bite the hand that has fed them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the big, because you see it so many guys go, I'm just going to go do me now. I want to go do me. Like, I'm just sick of this like dubstep shit. And I want to like, you know, I got to do something mean. It's like, bro, you literally just made Future Bass.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, wow, like huge departure, bro. Like you just made a banger with chords now.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like, you're such an artist, bro. You know? And it's like, I think that artists should do their thing, and I think that artists should grow. And if that's what you want, but like, you don't have to bite the hand that has fed you, that has literally given you a platform.
Agreed.
To be even able to do something different. And I just see it time and time, and it always fucking fails. You know what I mean? It always fucking fails. And it's like, we owe it to our fans. You're right. Cause they pay for the tickets, you know? And it's like, I'm doing a service. You know what I mean? I'm providing a product. I am providing an experience. I am a hired gun, so to speak, you know? And I need to function.
Yeah.
You know?
This is a conversation I had with my manager, this week, and also a friend. And I don't really feel like a DJ anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I don't really know if I should class myself as a DJ as well. And it's only been like a really, it's been a thing in the last like maybe 3 months. I've been really like actually thinking about it. deep down and kind of evaluating it? Because before, and I'd love your take on it, and I'd love to see where you're at in your shows and things like that. But 95% of the records I play when I DJ is my own records. Like the likelihood of me playing somebody else's record now, unless I'm doing like a 5 to 7 hour set, is very slim. Like, just purely because the amount of music I'm making and the sound that I want to kind of push against and do is what I produce as an artist. So I'm like kind of having this battle with myself. It's like, yes, I'm technically DJing, but my view as a DJ is like a crate digger. And there it's like, okay, we're going into the room and we're reading the room as a vibe, and we're going, okay, I know what needs to happen here. I know what people want here. I know what needs to happen here. Whereas for me is I'm going into the room and going, I'm just going to give them what I think they don't, that I think they want, but I have to do it within the parameters of my own music. And it's not about crate digging. It's, I don't spend hours on Beatport or hours in vinyl shops. If you catch me in a vinyl shop, I'm buying like a Bon Iver record or something like that to listen to when I'm cooking. Yeah. So it's like, that's how do your shows, because I know you write a lot of music as well, but how do your shows kind of differ between the DJ aspect of like playing other people's bangers or playing your own bangers?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, because in hardcore and hardstyle, it's like pretty, it's almost a little frowned upon to play other people's music.
Is it really?
A little bit. Wow. Not entirely, but like a lot of the Dutch guys pride themselves on playing all their own stuff, you know? And I can understand why. That's like a really great feeling.
Totally.
I don't do that. What you bring up is a very interesting evolution of the DJ as we see it today. You know, the true DJ does exist still. Like, go to any fucking club.
Exactly.
You know, that's like a regular club. You know, those guys are still the essence of DJing, you know, but we have now this EDM world and I say EDM broadly, not like, you know. It has put a different spin on it, and it's like a performance DJ, you know, it's like it's for all intents and purposes, we are DJing and we're mixing songs together. Of course, like we are still retaining the originality or the original essence of the evolution of DJing, but it's become this like performance. And so I tend to fall somewhere in that like my sets are very rarely, I stray out of the playlist. Very, very, very rarely. And especially at shows like EDC, I plan that shit like nobody's, like, dude, I am not up there guessing whatsoever, because I want to entertain, you know. That's really what I'm after. I'm after like doing crazy shit and allowing myself the like space to do something crazy. But I also like to play like 58 songs in 60 minutes sometimes. So I need like a lot. I need everything like dialed in transition wise, because that's just what I like to do. It's just, I want it to be extreme, you know,
On brand.
And so, exactly. It's on brand. It fits the music. It makes sense, you know? And I've always griped with like the really long hard style breakdowns. You know, I've always thought that was boring as shit, and it's why it never really clicked in America in the capacity that it could have, because of these like weird long breakdowns, and like American bands just didn't understand it. You know, quick consumer culture. But everywhere's like that more or less nowadays. And so to me, it's a balance. And so this is what I tell the Dutch guys when they ask me about it. I go, I'm a DJ, brother. I'm here. Like, I'm trying to play the hits, man. Like, there are some hits that I got to play.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I always play an Anger Fist song. I always play a Headhunter song. I always play a Darren Styles song, you know, because everybody knows the fucking song.
Yeah.
You know? And then so it's a balance of those, like, little bits of like the hits with a lot of my own original material, and you know, the songs that I know that people want to hear, and the songs that I just made, and the things that I'm testing out. So it's kind of like a 60-40 rule.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere in there, depending on the night.
Is there a culture in hard in your genre where you make edits of other people's records?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Big time. And it's really popular nowadays. It's actually become really popular with the TikTok kids and these like young Dutch kids who are making, you know, crazy 200 BPM stuff and just the most vile kicks, just like horrible sounding stuff, but it's just so great. And everybody loves it, you know, but it's the naivety. It's the ignorant naivety of not knowing what you're doing. Cause you're literally 17 years old and in high school and you just downloaded FL Studio, a crack for free and watched one tutorial. But like this kid who did that came up with the most interesting kick. Cause he literally doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
And
which is perfect. It's perfect.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And so I always say, don't be a Luddite. Don't be a Luddite, man. Cause if you get up in your 30s, once you start getting in your 30s, it's real easy to start becoming a little bit reactionary. You know, these fucking kids, man, they don't know what real hardcore is. Oh God, it's all this TikTok bullshit, you know? And like, I really have to make a concentrated effort to not get into that theory because I want to so bad.
Well, it's so easy to do that. It's so easy to talk shit on something that you don't understand, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just the way the human brain works is if you don't understand it, you talk shit on it until you understand it, which is also an amazing thing about you as a brand. Because.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I want to talk about the haters that you get.
Oh, yeah.
Because they fucking crack me up so much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they're out there.
And it's strange for me because like in my scene, we're not polarizing. I'm not doing anything out of the ordinary, if you know what I mean. Like it's not a polarizing kind of scene, the techno scene or the tech house, techno, whatever you want to kind of call it. I wouldn't class myself as a techno artist. I wouldn't class myself as a tech house artist and I wouldn't class myself as a house artist. Genres just keep people in boxes. But like in your scene, from what I've seen, and I only follow you in your scene, if I'm honest. Like I don't follow anybody else. So I'm coming from a very naive point of view, and very uneducated. But there seems to be a lot more haters in your scene than there is in mine. On a public that are willing to like talk out. What is that about?
I think a little bit of it has to do with the fact that like hardcore is old. Mm. Hardcore is a very old genre that has stood the test of time. Gabber House, dude, 94, 95, maybe even earlier, 92, you know, depending on who you're saying made the first hardcore techno track.
Yeah.
Which, you know, originally it was called hardcore techno and then Gabber House and all that. And Thunderdome was in the 90s and, you know, it was happening.
What
in
is
the States,
Thunderdome?
Thunderdome's like the biggest, like hardcore, the longest, biggest standing hardcore party. Wow. So, you know, back in the 90s, you can check it out on YouTube, watch like Thunderdome 96, you know, tens of thousands of kids in the, you know, huge hall. It's the biggest cultural movement from the teenage population in Holland ever, that has ever happened. It like really like was, Holland had never really had a huge cultural movement within their like younger demographic. And then in the 90s, hardcore came out. They pushed the tempo, they distorted the kicks, and Gabber House and hardcore became a thing. And it originated in Holland and spread all over the world. And the tracksuits, the shaved heads, the like, you know, the weird, the haka dance and all that stuff. And so it's old, man. It's older than like most of the genres. In fact, hardcore is a fundamental genre of electronic music. It goes back that deep. So I think there's this really, really rich cultural tradition within hardcore. And so to have a guy come in a cowboy hat, who's an American, who is embracing many American, quote, stereotypical American type ideals or you know, stereotypes, I guess, you know, yeah. It's like loud cowboy guy, like, yeehaw, I'm going to be fucking crazy. Social media, capitalism, like, blah, you know what I mean?
Named after the red, named after the red state as well. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's complete polarizing.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think hardcore has had a level of kind of like seriousness a lot in the past. That it's like serious music. It's like a culture. It's hardcore, you know?
Yeah.
But I came up in the up-tempo scene, which was like a newer evolution of hardcore in the like 2014 to like now. So stripped back, much, much more rough, simple, and the kids ate it up, and a lot of the old hardcore heads didn't like it. So like, I came up in the up-tempo world, and up-tempo always felt like a clash with the original hardcore. So I've always kind of had that. And the haters, man, they're pissed, you know? And like, there's been guys who've been making hardcore for 10, 12 years who haven't gotten any, you know, fame. And I got signed to Most Wanted within like a year of my first crew, you know, first thing. I played Masters within like first 3 years of doing this. Wow. And like, you know, like, it's not like I fucking had control over it, man.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
But the thing is, I always say this, there's a level of luck in this industry, in life, right? There's a level of luck, but there's also, you have to fucking work your ass off. You have to.
I think most people get an opportunity, but most people are not prepared and aren't willing to put in the consistent hard work that is required after you get that first opportunity. 100%. You know, and that's the difference between me and the other guys is I can confidently say I outwork these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I put out more content. I put more effort into my content. I get fucking shredded and jacked because I'm an entertainer.
Yeah.
You know, like, look at Chris Pratt. You think Chris Pratt was as big as he is now as an actor when he wasn't fucking drilled and really extremely good looking and jacked? Like, exactly. No,
yeah.
Hugh Jackman, like Robert Downey Jr., all these guys, dude, they like, it's like, I'm the product, so I'm going to be the best version of myself. And also, like, it ended up, but it's all, that's also organic. I love lifting weights. Yeah. I'm a lifter, man. You know, my whole team are lifters. My team lifts. We, you know, yeah, we do. We're in the culture. We're in the bodybuilding culture.
No, I like this a lot because I think, so I met you 20, I think it was 2019, maybe 2018.
Yeah, 19, I think.
19, yeah. Were you into training then?
I've always been into training, but I wasn't serious, super serious about it until the pandemic happened.
So this was it. Because I obviously started following you literally from when I met you. And then I was following you through the pandemic and saw the change of you're going hard on this gym shit. Like, really hard.
Yeah.
Which I'm a big trainer myself. Like, it is my daily routine going to the gym.
It's the best.
It just clarifies my brain and I'm
exactly
less, I'm less psycho when I'm not in the gym when I'm training.
Totally.
But I want to talk about that again. I've really noticed it to be part of you, really part of your brand. I've never really made it part of my brand. I post about it occasionally on stories, but I never really make it as a brand. You are a very extroverted person, which I really fucking respect and I'm slightly jealous of because I'm completely the opposite when it comes to that side of things. But the whole I need to look the best because I'm a performer, there's something that I really like about that. And I'm interested to like get your concept behind that as well.
Showbiz, baby. DJs forget that we're in the entertainment business.
Yep.
This is the entertainment business. Look at it. People pay to see a show. What do you think that? Like, you know, and so for me, I've always like embraced that. Maybe it's because I live in LA. Maybe it's because I'm fucking Hollywood, you know what I mean? But I've always just really liked that. But the thing about the gym is that hard style and hardcore is very, very popular in the gym community and always has been.
Is it really? Did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Big time. And there's like a trend of like TikTok hard style or gym hard style where it's just like remixes of like Lady Gaga and like Kesha and things like that. And it went like extremely viral. And so two of the guys who are on tour with me, they're these 22-year-old kids, this guy Yosef and Dionysus. Dude, they have like millions of monthly listeners. Yosef has 2 million monthly listeners.
Wow.
He's 22 years old, quit his job. His parents are from Afghanistan originally.
Wow.
And he's a first-generation American. And the kid just signed an insane deal. And like he moved to LA and he's chilling. And he's on tour with me. He played Beyond Wonderland. He's playing, you know, other big festivals, which I can't name. But That's it's like sick. Truly, it's a remarkable story.
Yeah.
But it all happened through the gym. It's all gym hard style. These guys are jacked bros who love hard style and love listening to it in the gym, and they've made careers out of it. And obviously that like sort of meshed with my affinity for the gym, and like the two worlds have sort of become merged now. And so, you know, you go to my shows and you got dudes like hitting poses and stuff, and it's quite diverse though at my shows, but you've got that section. And ultimately I do it because I love it. And yeah, it's an artistic process as well. Everything I do with intent, because I believe that intent and doing things with purpose that are of our own volition. So things that I enjoy, that I have chosen to do on my own.
Yeah.
When we do those things with purpose and with an attempt to get further depth in them, it makes us happy. It is really that simple. Mm. Happiness is not this, in my opinion, is not this mystical concept. Happiness is very simple. Relationships with other humans and people and working hard.
Yeah.
We are but a product of our daily habits. We are but a product of our a man is a summation of his productive work and his values.
Yeah.
And so for me, diving deep into that and seeing my body change and seeing the progress I can make strength wise, physique wise, and all of that stuff, and sculpting my body slowly over time is brings so much meaning and fulfillment to me. Mm. You know, it really does. And it's the same thing with music. It's the depth that I get just attacking hardcore, just learning about hardcore and learning the tradition and the history. And I take that into every bit of my life, Will. Like when I go to Europe, which I go, you know, at least, probably once a month at least, you know, dude, I make sure I get my ass in those art museums.
Yeah.
And the level of understanding I have of art history now is like just nothing compared to what it used to be. And now I can go and I can see these artists and I look at the painting and go, that's Kavinsky, you know, or not Kavinsky, Kandinsky. That's Kandinsky. And I'm like, and that's Pollock and that's, you know, Rothko. And I know it, and it makes me feel good to know that stuff. And so the gym is the same thing. Music is the same thing. Cooking. I'm sure that you like to cook, right?
Love to cook.
Me too. And isn't it the most fulfilling thing turning something into nothing? And when you take that extra second and you sprinkle the parsley, you didn't have to put the parsley on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause you're fucking, you're alone in your house alone.
Exactly.
But you do it anyways. But you do it anyway.
Of course.
And it feels good. And that shit carries over into every aspect of my life. The people who are willing to put the parsley on their meal, even when they're alone, not all the time, but sometimes, and plate a meal up, those are the people who are happier and can, I don't know. I this is what I believe, you know?
No, I literally, you put that into words that I don't think I would have been able to put into words myself. I guess the in a simplified form, I would say attention to detail.
Exactly.
And I've always really respected people that have attention to detail. One thing that I'd like to ask you is, what's the balance of all of these things together? Because I do a lot of things like you. Okay, so like if I put everything down in a form, like if I write everything down that I do a fuck ton of shit. There comes a point where you need to balance And you need to accept that the level of perfection isn't always going to be there on certain things, because you can't physically can't mentally put everything into everything I do. I can put a percentage of everything I do into it. Or are you all in? Are you like, I'm doing this one thing and I'm doing everything to the best of my ability? Or is, because for example, this podcast, I love doing. I love these conversations that I've had. And I've been doing this since COVID every single week. And there's a level of attention to detail that I have on this podcast that I will make sure I will always carry on. Could I do this podcast better? Could I spend more time on the editing? Could I do something to kind of grow the podcast a bit more? Yes, I 100% could. But I don't have the time in my life to give it that. And I am accepting that the podcast will grow over time and it will do what it does until I get the team around me that we can create something really interesting. And what I want, the end goal is to have these conversations in person in my own podcast studio, and it's like a whole thing. But I can't do that right now. So it's like, That's what I'm kind of asking you, is like, is there levels of what you do in your day-to-day life and in your career where you're like, okay, I can't necessarily achieve what I want to achieve now, but I can achieve a certain level of that perfectionist?
Yeah. And it's the pick your battles thing. And because we are all subject to perfectionism. And I remember, who was it? It was Wookie. I think Wookie. He goes, listen, bro, 90% is good. Put the fucking song out.
Yeah.
And I was like, he didn't put it like that. He put it much more eloquent, but that's how I read it. But it was like, dude, 90% is good. Is that fucking snare fill at bar 158 going to change the song?
Yeah.
No, it's not going to change the song. Now, if it's going to drive you insane, fix the fucking snare.
Yeah.
But like, you know, but good enough or very close to, there has to be a level where it's okay, you know? And we have to constantly check ourselves and remind ourselves of that. So I have a plate, right? And I can fill the plate. And the things that need to be the most important in all the effort, like that truly 110% effort, gets put into the brand.
Totally.
You know, it gets put into Lil Texas. It gets put into the live shows. It gets put into the music and the creative direction. And that has to trump the rest of it.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I have to be doing the best at, and that I have to, within reason, obviously not like, you know, perfectionism level, but like all the effort needs to go into there in the individual things that happen, that I put my best foot forward this time. And the next time my best foot forward might be even better than the last time. And I'm sure that some songs for you do better than others. And that's as simple as that. But expecting to go from 100 to 101 to 102 to 103, 104 every single time is unrealistic. And it will ultimately destroy an artist's career and their mental health.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, I've got my things that I enjoy that bring me fulfillment, and I do those things, music being the top. Then it's, you know, the gym stuff, you know, whatever. And then cooking and my reading. I read so much. I read so, so, so much.
Really?
Oh my God. Like an obscene amount, actually. I try not to watch a lot of TV.
Give me 2 seconds. Let's hold on. I really need to piss, and it's not good.
Go piss. Go piss.
Give me 2 seconds.
I actually kind of have to take a piss too.
Jesus Christ. That was so needed. I've had this.
Yeah,
like,
I drank a huge coffee before we did this.
Yeah, I'm like, I've had this like weird stomach for like the last couple of days. And today I'm just like, I need to get this fixed. So I'm just like over hydrate. And I've like 2 liquid IVs and an Athletic Greens kind of thing, and I'm a massive bottle of water, and I'm just like trying to get through this. So I want to slightly circle back on the gym stuff, and get your thoughts. Steroids.
Is this a natty or not?
Sorry?
is this turning into a Lil Texas natty or not?
No, like,
I'm not.
You've not taken them.
I'm not natural. No, right. I do.
You do.
I have dabbled.
So
I do. Yeah.
I want to talk about that because I've never have, but I really want to. And I have this thing in my mind where like I really want to try a cycle. I really like, but like I also don't.
Yeah.
And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on it because I think it's easy.
Yeah,
I can go speak to my gym guys and they're like, fucking take it because look at what it does to you. But I'm like, yeah, I don't know. But I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting. A lot of guys are like really weird about it. And I was like kind of like skeptical about like kind of coming out with this kind of stuff, you know, but I put out a song called Deca, like literally
I saw
a month ago,
which is why I ask you, because I saw it.
Yeah. It's like, hey, come on. Like, dude, like look at the before and after. Like, come on, dude. Like you think these fucking shoulder veins are just there. Listen, my thing with it is it's not necessary, right?
Yeah.
Now, one cycle of you know, and if guys, I don't condone this. I want to like make this very, very clear. All of this is, I do not condone the use of any of this. That being said, and I'm not a doctor. So that being said, you know, the best way to start is you just do test. You know, you just take a cycle of test. And then come all the way off. Don't like, you know, cruise immediately after your first cycle. Like don't keep taking testosterone at a smaller dose before you do another. So it's like cruising and blasting or whatever. A lot of guys do that. But you take tests, come off all the way, see how you feel. But the thing about it is, man, you do it once, you're probably going to want to do it again. I am though a big proponent of TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, HRT, for guys who are in their 30s or 40s who have like very low testosterone, below 300, taking testosterone. I think it seems taboo, but it literally could be like almost a one-stop shop fix for like a lot of men's issues that we experience in our late 30s and 40s, like lowering libido, you know, not feeling as clear-headed, not, you know, just overall health, you know, because we go like this our whole lives. And if you can get yourself into like an optimal state of hormones, dude, it's just so beneficial across the board, you know, and all this like rhetoric around like roid rage and you know, like honestly, I get a little more emotional when I'm on cycle. Like I actually am a little bit more sappy, you know. I'm crying in movies and stuff.
Yeah, like, one of my friends that does it, he told me which really resonated with me. It just makes you more of who you are. If you're an angry fucker, you're becoming more of an angry fucker. If you're an emotional person, you're becoming more emotional. If you're super fucking nice, you're becoming even nicer. Like that's what just elevates you as a human being, which makes sense. It's a hormone. Testosterone is a fucking hormone. And for men, there's the saying grumpy old man. There's a reason why there's a saying for grumpy old man. And it's because it's related to the lack of testosterone. Testosterone gives men what?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been beneficial for me. I'm on TRT. So like, I'm like having a small dose, you know, and I've done that for about 2 years now because I had really, really low levels.
Yeah.
I was below 300.
Yeah.
And as you know, I just felt weird. And at 31, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go ahead and do this. My life has been significantly better since.
Yeah.
My mental health has been great. I feel clear and I feel very, how do I say this? Ready for the situation, man. I don't feel social anxiety very much anymore. Yeah. I feel very like I'm ready for life and I'm here, you know?
Yeah.
And so it gives me that sort of like take charge, be a leader kind of mentality, which I've always sort of had, but anyways. So if you're going to dabble, I highly suggest the test only cycle first. You need to see what happens because if you're very sensitive, you might get gyno or something like that. But you can just take an AI. Always have the AI on hand. Your buddies can probably tell you about all this. And if you are serious, I can also tell you about it. But you got to see what's up. If you're running a bunch of compounds your first cycle, you're not going to know where the side effects are coming from.
Yeah.
So you need to see how your body reacts just to testosterone. And then down the line, if you decide that you want to do more, you can obviously do more and you'll be able to mitigate those side effects accordingly because you'll know, okay, well, I took that amount of testosterone for 12 weeks and it was totally fine.
Yeah.
So now I added this other thing in and I'm getting fucking weird. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably that.
Yeah.
So I need to like balance the secondary hormones and obviously always get blood work. And at the end of the day, it's really not that big a deal, man. People make it out to be a much bigger deal than it is. And like, you know.
No, I think this is these are conversations that need to be had, because I think it's so normal unnormal to talk about these things, and it's such a hoo-ha, but yet, like, I don't want to kind of I don't want to generalize, but there's like multiple people, women and men, injecting themselves with a lot worse shit that's so normal in our society. Like the fucking amount of women putting lip fillers into their bodies, that's just, you're literally putting poison into your body. Like, this stuff isn't good for you. Whereas there's a very weird underbelly on taking steroids
it's become a lot more normalized. It's become a lot more normalized, yeah. I think, lately. Because, like, it's like, dude, every athlete is fucking taking something or has taken something. Yeah. All the fucking celebrities have probably taken something or another, you know? And at the end of the day, doing one cycle is not going to fuck you up for life. It is not going to like really have any negative consequences on you as long as you do it properly.
Yeah.
Now, if you are one of those people where you're like a hyper responder, or like you have a lot of side effects, you're really sensitive to the estrogen conversion, you know, the aromatization aspect of it, then like, yeah, you're going to know. And then you can like, you know, be like, okay, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
But by and large, a cycle of just testosterone is, you know, and I know, and I say this because I know so many people are interested in it, man. Yeah, and so many people want to do it. So many gym guys want to do it, but they're scared and blah, blah, blah. And so these are just the facts. Will you put on a shitload of muscle in a short amount of time? Yes, you can put on a significant amount of muscle. You will get strong as hell quickly.
Yeah.
Now, will you be able to keep all of that after your cycle? It depends. No, you're not going to be able to keep all of it. Now, you know, are you going to get absolutely dick skin peeled, shredded, taking steroids? Only if you diet.
Exactly.
Steroids are not a solution to dieting. People think that they're going to look like King Leonidas in 300 when they take steroids, and you're just not, dude. You have to diet. Steroids are an edge that will help.
Yeah,
certainly. They will help you burn a little more fat. They will, but they're the fat burning applications of steroids is it's a byproduct. It's not really like what they're doing necessarily. Mm. Really what they're doing is preventing you. They're speeding up the recovery process. Yeah. So you go and you lift, tear your muscles up, you eat a bunch of protein. That process is expedited significantly.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And so bodybuilders oftentimes, pro bodybuilders, when they're taking really crazy cycles, it's so that they can get so lean that they don't lose any muscle. It's actually to prevent catabolic states more than it is to prevent gaining muscle, especially when you're taking cutting cycles. Now, bulking cycles obviously are different.
Interesting.
So come up with a protocol, decide what you want to do. If you want to bulk, if you want to cut, if you want to just run it and eat how you want and see what happens, also a thing. But, you know, I think that my personal take is like, come up with a protocol, decide what you're going to do, and then plan accordingly.
Said like a true businessman.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's the end goal with Little Texas right now in your where you're at now? If somebody could say 20 years time, what is that for you? Or even 10 years. 20 years is a long way. 10 years.
Well, I've got the like kind of like standard stuff that it's like, I want to play the main stage at EDC. I want to play the main stage at DEF CON, you know, or like the black stage at least at DEF CON. But what I really want to do is be like hosting my own festivals and events, kind of like what Sudden Death has done.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to work with like huge, you know, really, really large pop artists. Like I did get to remix Lady Gaga and Elton John, but I would like to like be collabing with, you know, artists on the level of like Charlie XCX and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so bringing hardcore and art style into a sphere that is even larger than it's at today. Now, practically, man, I want a family and a house, you know, that's really what I want. And I want to be able to retire, you know, at like 60, you know, and have millions of dollars. Those are like actually the practical goals that I have. It's to own a house, to have a family, send my kids to school, and ultimately see where that takes me. But the main goals are like main stage, millions of monthly listeners, and, you know, the financial benefits of that, and setting myself up to like not have to work after 60. Well, you know, and like own a gym.
I think the thing with those goals is that it actually, the having your own festivals, the headlining festivals as well, headlining shows, doing all of those will equate to financial success, which will then give you the materialistic things that you have as your goal, correct?
Absolutely. And I think it works the other way as well too, that it's like, if you're, my prime directive is own a house, you know, cause like really, like what more is there really to do sometimes? I think about these things often. I'm like, is there really like more to do in life than like own a house and start a family and like go on vacations and stuff? Like at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, you have this fruitful career and you travel and all this great stuff, but like, we kind of all end up somewhere, you know, you got to sleep somewhere every single night. You got to sleep somewhere. So it's like kind of making these like sort of trad goals, like own a house, you know, like they're byproducts of what exactly that they're byproducts of the career, that if I'm able to afford a house, then I've been working so hard in my career that it's able to sustain that sort of thing. So they go back. So the goals kind of flip back and forth and they feed into each other. And depending on the day, you know, it's which one am I sort of putting as the end and, you know, using as a means, or is the means this, and, you know.
Yeah, I agree. It's also something that it's probably that, maybe a bit of disrespect. The only one thing that I take from my old manager is that she said, the amount of artists that make house music that can't afford their house is ridiculous. And that really hit a kind of a thing in my brain that I was like, okay, I need to set myself up so that if house music ends tomorrow, I still have a place to live and I don't need to worry. And I think that's
exactly.
My parents kind of has always pushed that in my mind as well since I was a kid, is like, don't pay somebody else's rent. Don't pay somebody else's mortgage, pay your own mortgage. And that is a huge thing. And I've got a lot of friends that like buy their first house and it's amazing to see them. But the one thing they all say to me is, I wish I did this 10 years before. And they could have done this 10 years before, but it's just about, what do you have to give up to do that 10 years before? Do you have to give up buying the nice car? Do you have to give up buying the materialistic shit that you really don't need, but to buy a house? And don't get me wrong, that's not everybody. But I guess the thing is like, you can set yourself up for the future way earlier on in our lives than you actually think. And it's like, you don't have to move to the city that everyone's moving to. You don't have to do certain things that will stretch you financially, that will put pressure on.
Where do you live?
I live in Detroit.
Really?
I live in Detroit and I have a place in the UK, yeah. Oh,
I did not know that. That's cool.
So it's like, yeah, I could afford to buy a house in Detroit. Most people can. But can I afford to buy a house in LA? No.
I'm probably going to leave.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing.
For that exact reason.
Yeah, it's like, if I really wanted to, like, I could pull everything together and then I will be absolutely scraping by every month. I don't want that. I don't want that in my life.
No, yeah.
Like, I want to have a level of life where I can live life and I can enjoy it. So Detroit was great for me for that. It's not my end goal. But hey, it's like, it's a stepping stone. And it means that I can come on tour over here and I don't have to pay anything for hotels.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
I don't have to set up in a city and pay stupid rent. It just allows me to do what I do, and I can work here. I have a studio here. I have a life here. It's just great. And I think
that's awesome.
I think there's a lot of artists out there, a lot of people out there that feel like they have to be somewhere to get somewhere. And in this day and age, you really don't.
You don't. It's the internet, man.
Yeah, it's
100%.
It's fucking great.
And that's the beauty of it. It's the the positive side of, you know, where we are at in the music industry with social media and all that stuff.
Yeah. Where would you move?
I kind of want to go to Austin, man. I kind of want to go back to Texas.
Yeah.
My sister just had a kid.
Yeah.
So I've got like a nephew and like, I don't know, man. It's like, it's still cool. It's kind of LA light, you know, like, I don't know if I'm totally ready to like, I love LA. That's the thing is, though, is I really like it out here.
I didn't know you were in LA. I thought you were still in Texas.
No. I've been in LA for a long time, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And I like it, but it's starting to become like, as I've made fiscal type decisions more important, as those have taken precedence in my life, I've started to realize that it's fiscally irresponsible for me to live here.
Yeah.
And if I'm willing to pay this much for rent, I might as well live in a house.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And so that's the deal, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I totally respect it as well. Although Austin's fucking expensive as well.
I'm used to here, so everything's cheap.
Everything's cheap. That is one thing. My manager lives in LA, and like we like send each other property. I look at properties all the time, and
yeah.
I like send him one in LA that's like 1.6 million, and then I send him one in Detroit that's like 200 grand, and it's literally the same thing, but way bigger in Detroit and way nicer. It's fucking wild. But
yep,
joys of LA. There has to be a demand, right? It's one of the most biggest cities in America to become someone.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Plans for the rest of the year?
Europe, this summer, you know, gonna finish out the year pretty strong with the festivals and stuff, or finish out this first bit with the end of the tour, and then I'm gonna go over to Europe and do a bunch of stuff in Europe, a bunch of festivals over the summer.
Cool.
And then come back, and then it's just continuing to tour, probably put out another techno record, release the album, and then a slew of singles, obviously keeping up with the seasonal mixes, and then, you know, planning out the next year, like another album probably, another tour, and kind of see where the techno thing maybe takes me. You know, just for fun as a break, you know, a break from the from the 200 stuff. So
is there actually money in hardcore on a music level, on a stream
like
level?
In Spotify?
Yeah, actually, I mean, cool.
Like the those two guys that I mentioned earlier, the Jim Hart style guys, that's how they make all their money.
Really?
They make more money out there than I do on shows.
Yeah.
You know, or like very close. Yeah. So yeah, if you can get it to crack, absolutely. There is definitely, and I don't do bad on Spotify. I've done actually pretty well.
Yeah.
Although my monthly listeners are not high, I've done like back end work and I've done different things, you know? And so I make my money through my shows, but it's definitely not unheard of. You know, I'm reaping some benefits from that. But
is that a goal?
You gotta get a hit.
Is that a goal to move things forward in the streaming realm?
Yes, absolutely. That's like probably my biggest thing, because I think that I can like, I'm already doing very well, but I think I can like expedite that growth tremendously. And it's always been the weak link. It's always been the weak link for most hardcore and hardstyle DJs is the streaming world. There's some guys who do really, really well, but it is difficult. It's not your typical streaming genre.
In your world, the streaming artists that stream really well, are they the ones that are headlining the shows?
Yeah, oftentimes, yeah. Yeah,
time.
But the Jim Hart style stuff is a little different.
Yeah, because in my world, it's not. Streaming and nothing correlates. So you could be headlining shows and selling crazy tickets, but your records will probably be doing shit. And if you get radio, you could have a record that does really well on radio that doesn't do well on streaming, that does well in a show and you're selling tickets. Or it could be you're streaming mad numbers and you can't sell to. It's fucking weird and you just can't get your head around it. And there's only very small handful of people that do all three.
Yeah, I think that actually also is probably in hardcore as well.
Yeah.
In hard style. Because I'm the do well at the tickets and shows primarily, and have a lot of like fans. I can say confidently that I have quite a number of fans, but streaming isn't my strong suit. Whereas there's other guys who stream really well who don't get to play as many shows. Yeah. And that's just one of those things that, you know, you have to take the music industry with a grain of salt, and you have to take the streaming stuff with a grain of salt. You got a guy who's got a million monthly listeners, and it's like, well, yeah, but he could have just been put in some playlists.
Exactly.
You know, because there's no actual connection to the brand or project or fans, you know? And so I think that that's, depending on someone's goals though, you know, they could be cool with that. I personally want that like full integration, you know, and that's probably like the next step for me, is like trying to integrate the streaming into the, you know, into the music stuff. So
yeah, it's also like, let's say for instance, how many followers do you have on your, so on your Instagram right now?
Like 105,000.
So it's like, what I've always been, I much prefer this, is you, would you rather 1 million followers that don't interact, or 100,000 followers that all come to your shows and all interact? And I think that's
100,000 all day,
all day long. And it's just the quality of fan, and it's what can you give the fan that they want every single day? They want to consume you every single fucking day. It's not, you're not Kim Kardashian where no one really gives a fuck, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It, in the grand scheme, they just know who you are. And I think that's the really hard thing in this industry, is to kind of convert the fans into super fans. And it's a conversation that I have with my team every single week. It's like, how do we convert these? How can we give so much to these people that it feels like when they buy a ticket, we're still giving them shit?
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of that is like, do they ride for, I always say it this way. It's like, people are going to ride for me, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I've been able to, unlike a lot of other DJs, I've been able to make Hardstyle, Uptempo, Terror, Mainstream Hardcore, Hard Psy, Happy Hardcore. I've been able to do the whole run of genres.
Yeah.
And nobody really bats an eyelash about it. Whereas like no Euro guys do that. They only do Hardstyle. They only do Hardcore. They do one thing, you know? And it's because people like me.
Yeah.
You know? And I try to like let that, you know, shine, that it's like, you know.
Well, you're doing something that nobody else is doing at the end of the day. What I see. One last thing, the performance side of things. Like, it's amazing watching you. I've never seen you live, but I've seen your videos live. Has that always been something, or is that something where you like, I have to implement this into my shows?
No, I've always been a performer, man. I've had really no problems like getting up in front of people and talking and like stuff like that. Like I'm quite comfortable under those conditions. And I've all, cause I was a musician for a long time. I played bass and stuff. And
yeah.
So I'm used to being on the stage, and I just think that that's what my strong point. That's actually really my strength, is like, put me on the stage, man. Like they will remember me.
Yeah.
You know, I will give them a show to remember, and I'm confident in my abilities there. And it is something that has come naturally to me, but I've obviously honed that natural, you know, inclination.
Are you getting naked at EDC this year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course. That's why I'm getting shredded.
That was the fucking best thing I've seen on the internet for a very long time.
It was a little nerve wracking, bro. It was a little nerve wracking. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was like, oh, what if my dong pops out? Like, what if I took half of Viagra the first year I did it. I took half of Viagra just to like make sure, you know, that like, you know, just in case, you know, at least I was like a little, you know, on the fuller side.
Did you give it a little fluff up? Give it a little fluff up. Just
Yeah. Well, I got late too that night too. So it ended up working out. Like, I was on half of Viagra, you know? And so then I get off the stage and I end up getting laid, and you know, he was like, wow. Wow, you're really ready. And I was like, it's always like this.
I love that.
It's not.
Yeah, definitely. I feel you. Mate, we've just done an hour and 20. Thank you so much for coming on. Like, I've really enjoyed this, and I'd love to do this in the future again.
Absolutely, man. Whenever.
Keep doing what you're doing. How can people follow you? How can people get involved with the Lil Texas vibe?
It's at Lil Texas pretty much across the board. Yeah, so you can just find me on all the social media platforms. TikTok is Lil Texas Hardcore, but you can find me at Lil Texas pretty much across the board. And new album coming soon, still touring a little bit, and if you're in Europe, I will be coming your way soon. So
amazing.
Yeah,
dude, thank you so much. See you soon.
No, thank you, man.
Peace out,
man. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is a wrap. Big love to everybody who listened. Thanks to Little Texas for coming on. I loved it. Please share. Please review. Please subscribe. Till you see you next time.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.